fights between middle management and cleaning staff. Thus, we make a right onto Madison and head back uptown to 721, where the doormen are only too happy to have a shot at pulling my arms and legs to extract me from the limo. "Wait right here, guys," I say once upright. "I'll be back in a minute." I get upstairs, spend 10 sweaty minutes rummaging through Grayer's room, forcing me to reapply my crepas, locate the card in the laundry hamper, and am ready to rock and roll. Roll, mostly. The elevator door opens, and, of course, there stands H.H., my Harvard hottie. His jaw drops. "Just kill me." "What, you never saw a Halloween costume before?" I bristle, lumbering in with my head held high.
"No, well, it's October 23rd, but..."
"So?"
Yeah.
"Yes, I have. He stammers. "Hello, are you ever not speechless?" I attempt to shimmy so that I can face the wall. Of course, in this 5x7 box, I make it all of 2 degrees away from him. He is quiet for a moment. "Look, I'm really sorry for the other night. Sometimes those guys can be real assholes when they drink. I know that's no excuse, but I mean, they're just old friends from high school."
"And?"
I say to the wall.
"And..."
He seems stumped. "And you shouldn't judge me based on one drunken night at Dorian's." I shimmy back to face him.
Yeah, that's one drunken night when your buddies from back in the day called me a hoe.
Listen, sometimes I hang out with friends whose politics I don't agree with, but only up to a point. If, oh, say, gang rape were on the agenda for the evening, I would speak up.
Well,
for someone who didn't like it when snap judgments were made about you, it's pretty hypocritical of you to judge me so quickly based on their behavior.
Fair enough.
I take a deep breath and try to straighten to my full height.
Let me clarify. I'm judging you on the fact that you didn't step in to shut them up.
He looks back at me. Okay. I should have said something. I'm sorry things got so out of hand. He tucks his hair behind his ear.
Listen, come out with me tonight and let me make it up to you. I'm hanging out with some college friends. It's a whole different crowd, I promise.
The door slides open, and both a woman in a cashmere wrap and her standard poodle glare with annoyance because there's no room for them around my costume. The door slides closed. I realize I have only 2 more floors to acquiesce.
Obviously, I have a really decadent affair ahead of me. I gesture with 1 3-fingered hand to my purple torso. But I can try to stop by around 10.
Great! I'm not sure exactly where we're going. We were thinking of chaos, or the next thing, but we'll definitely be at Nightingale's till 11.
Well, I'll try to make it.
Despite the fact that I am not completely clear where in his list of destinations I should aim to make it to, the doors open to the lobby, and I attempt a sexy waddle to the car, trying to remember to lead with my hips. I wait until H.H. is safely around the corner, and then, after 1 last ass push from the doorman, we are on our way. I take a little bit of pleasure from the fact that Mrs. X is forced to lean across and pin the card on Grayer herself, as she has the use of all 10 of her fingers.
"Honey, I finally found out who the Brightmans used to book their safari," she begins, but Mr. X gestures to the phone and shakes his head.
Not to be outdone, she pulls her StarTAC out of her Judith Lieber pumpkin clutch and dials. The puffy, primary-colored side of the car sits in prolonged silence.
"I don't think her decorator did a very good job."
"Take another hard look at those numbers."
"And mauve?
That APR, is he nuts?
Bamboo for a kitchen?
Buy back $10 billion over the next 3 years.
I look down at Grayer and poke his yellow tummy with a purple finger. He looks up and pokes me back. I squeeze his felt chub. He squeezes mine.
"So," Mr. X flips his phone closed with a loud click and looks at me. "Do they have Halloween in Australia?"
I think they have something called All Souls Day, but,
I don't think people dress up or trick-or-treat traditionally, I answer.
Honey, Mrs. X intercedes, this is Nanny. She took over from C-A-I-T-L-I-N.
Oh, right, right, of course. You're pre-law.
I want to sit next to Mommy, Grayer suddenly bursts out.
Grove, stay next to me and keep me company, I say, looking down.
No, I want to sit next to Mommy now!
Mrs. X looks over at Mr. X, who has retreated back behind his paper.
We don't want to get your fun makeup on Mommy's coat. Stay with Nanny, sweetie.
After a few more rounds, he finally tuckers out, and the four of us sit in silence as the car glides down to the very bottom of the city, where the dense, narrow streets of Lower Manhattan give way to the imposing towers of the financial district. The neighborhood appears deserted, except for the funereal line of town cars forming outside Mr. X's company. Mr. and Mrs. X slide out and march ahead of us into the building, leaving Grayer and me unassisted to maneuver our spherical bodies out of the car and onto the sidewalk.
Nanny, say three and I'll push. Say three, Nanny. Say it.
With his little feet in my backside and my face nearly on the sidewalk, it's no wonder he can't hear me when I scream, three! I smush my face to the left to see Grayer sticking his lips out the crack in the window.
Did you say it, Nanny? Did ya?
I can sense a flurry of activity behind my enormous haunches, accompanied by snippets of the mastermind at work.
Okay, now I'm Rabbit, and you're Pooh, and are you counting? And after all the honey stuck in the tree? That's three, Nanny, on three.
He could be constructing a catapult out of cocktail napkins back there, for all I know.
Womp!
I did it, Nanny, I did it.
I right myself, reach down with my three-fingered hand for his, and we waddle with pride toward the entrance. Mr. and Mrs. X have kindly held the elevator for us, and we ride up to the 45th floor with another couple whose children couldn't attend. Homework. We all step out into a cavernous reception area, which has been transformed into a Tim Burton film. The marble walls are covered in cut-out bats and fake cobwebs. Every inch of the ceiling drips in streamers, spiders, and skeletons. There are numerous bar tables strategically placed at regular intervals around the room, each aglow with a hand-carved pumpkin centerpiece. It seems as though every unemployed actor in the tri-state area has been called in to entertain the troops. At the reception desk, Frankenstein pretends to answer phones, Betty Boop walks by with a tray of drinks, and Marilyn is singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President, to a cluster of Mr. X's colleagues in the corner. Grayer looks around with a bit of trepidation until Garfield comes by with a tray of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You can take one. Go ahead, Grayer, I encourage him. He has some trouble with the gloves on, but manages to secure one and munches, slowly mushing his body tighter against my leg. The far wall is a breathtaking, floor-to-ceiling view of the Statue of Liberty. I seem to be the only one appreciating it, but then I'm also one of the few nannies with a visible face. Apparently, Mrs. X was not alone in her concept for the evening. All the nannies are in huge, rented costumes at least 3 feet in circumference. The child is a small Snow White. Nanny is a large dwarf. The child is a small farmer. Nanny is a very large cow. The child is a small Pied Piper. Nanny is a large rat. However, the winners, hands down, are the Teletubbies. I exchange wan smiles across the room with two Tinky Winkies from Jamaica. A couple with a small Woodstock and a large Snoopy in tow comes over to us. Darling, you look fabulous, says the wife to Mrs. X, or maybe Grayer.
Happy Halloween, Jacqueline,
Mrs. X replies, giving her an air kiss. Jacqueline, wearing a tiny pink pillbox hat with her black Armani, barrels on to Mr. X.
Darling, you're not in costume, you bad boy.
Her own betrothed is wearing a captain's hat with his pinstriped suit.
I'm dressed as a lawyer, Mr. X says, but really, I'm an investment banker.
Stop,
Jacqueline says, giggling.
You're such a stitch.
She looks down at Lala and Woodstock. You little darling should go check out the games area. It's fabulous. I look over at Snoopy, who's listing under the weight of the giant head. We got a much better company this year to organize the whole thing. They did Blackstone's 4th of July bungee jump and cocktails. I heard that was lovely. Mitzi Newman's gotten addicted. She had a free-fall bridge installed in Connecticut. Go ahead, Grayer, Mrs. X encourages. He stares up at all the macabre mayhem and doesn't look entirely convinced that he wants to be separated from his parents right now. Go on, sport. And if you're good, I'll take you to see the executive dining room, Mr. X says, prompting Grayer to look up at me. Where Daddy has lunch, I explain. I take his hand and follow our Peanuts team to the children's area, which is cordoned off with a little picket fence. As Barbie opens the gate, I look at her. Good idea, I say. Let's keep out the grown-ups. The whole 20-foot area is filled with activity tables and games that seem mostly to involve throwing things. A miscalculation on someone's part, I think, as a small Big Bird goes down. I notice very quickly that the grown-up drink trays aren't circulating in here and lean out over the fence to swipe a little relief. Occasionally, parents swing by, like maitre d's, to ask if the child is enjoying him, herself, and remark, a marshmallow ghost, ooh, scary, then turn back to each other to add, you just have no idea what our renovation is costing. It's really staggering, but Bill wanted a screening room. And they shrug, roll their eyes, and shake their heads. Mrs. X has come in with Sally Kirkpatrick, a woman I recognize from Grayer's swimming class, to watch her 3-foot Batman try to obliterate his ring-toss opponents. I come up behind them to check in about bedtime. Your new girl's really good at getting Grayer in the pool, Mrs. Kirkpatrick says. Thanks. I wish I could take him, but Tuesday's my day at the Parents' League, and with ice skating on Fridays and French on Thursdays and cats on Wednesday, I need one day to do something for myself. I know. I'm so busy. I'm on 4 different committees this season. Oh, can I put you down for a table for the breast ball? Of course. So what happened to Caitlin? Your new girl didn't seem to know. Sally, it was a nightmare. I'm lucky I found Nanny when I did. Caitlin, whose work I never found to be exemplary, by the way, but I put up with it, because, well, one does. Anyway, she had the nerve to ask for the last week of August off, after I already gave her the first 2 weeks of January when we went to Aspen. You're kidding. Well, I just felt she was trying to take complete advantage of me. Ryan, play fair. That was Iolanthe's ring, Sally shouts at her Batman. But I positively did not know what to do, Mrs. X continues, sipping Perrier. So you fired her? Sally asks eagerly. First, I talked to a professional problem consultant. Oh, who'd you use? Brian Swift. I hear he's great. He was fantastic. Helped me put the whole thing into perspective. He made it clear that my authority as house manager had been called into question, and I had to bring in a replacement to drive the point home. Brilliant! Don't let me forget to get his number from you. I'm having such problems with Rosarita. The other day, I asked her to run up to Midtown to pick up a few things while Ryan was in hockey class, and she said she didn't want to because she didn't think she'd have enough time to get back. I mean, does she think I don't know how long it takes to get around? I know. It's appalling. After all, when the kids are in class, they're just sitting there on our dime. I mean, really. So are you done with all your interviews? Sally asks. Well, we have collegiate on Tuesday, but I'm not sure if I want him on the west side, Mrs. X says, shaking her head. But it's such a good school. We'd be thrilled if Ryan got in there. We're hoping the violin gives him an edge. Oh, Grayer plays the piano. I had no idea that was important, Mrs. X says. Well, it depends on his level. Ryan's already competing regionally. Oh, I see. That's fantastic. Apprehensive of what I might say to Mrs. X at this moment on 2 vodka tonics, I tiptoe backward and spot Grayer, still slinging beanbags like a pro, which leaves me free to grab another drink and observe the grown-up side of the room. Everyone is dressed in black, The men are tall. The women, slim. They all stand with the left arm folded across their abdomen, the left hand supporting the right elbow so the right hand can wave a drink around as they talk. As the pumpkin centerpieces slowly burn down, they begin to cast long shadows of bankers and banker wives, and everyone is starting to look to me like a Charles Adams cartoon. I realize I'm getting woozy from the heat and the alcohol, but my purple posterior doesn't fit into any of the pint-sized plastic chairs. So I sit on the floor a few feet away from the cupcake table where Grayer has stationed himself while his pitching arm recovers. There is so much commotion around us from the Busby Berkeley staff of hired activity folk that I must consciously fix my stare on Grayer while he decorates his fourth cupcake. I lean my head against the wall and watch with pride as he assertively grabs sprinkles and silver balls while other children wait for their nannies, crouched beside them, to hand over tubes of frosting as if their charges were about to perform surgery. Eventually, Grayer's frosting frenzy slows, and he is left staring with glossy eyes at the black and orange cardboard centerpiece, his gooey hands motionless atop the table. Little beads of sweat are forming on his face. He must be boiling in that costume. I crawl over and whisper in his ear, "Hey, buddy, why don't you take a break from all that cake-making and come hang out with me for a bit?" He drops his forehead on the table, narrowly missing his candy corn masterpiece. "Come on, Grove," I say, slipping him into my arms and shuffling back to the wall on my knees. I unzip his hood and use a napkin to wipe the dripping makeup from his forehead and frosting from his hands. "I got a bob for an apple," he mumbles as I lay him down with his head resting on the white rectangle of my costumed lap. "Sure. Just close your eyes for a few minutes first." I take a swig from my newest drink, letting the room soften a bit more as I fan us both with a prospectus left beneath a nearby cabinet. Grayer's body becomes heavy as he drifts off. Closing my eyes, I try to picture myself in this room at some important business-type thing, but can't seem to conjure anything other than leading a board meeting as Tinky Winky. I must keep nodding off, because I start to dream about Mrs. X in a mink la-la costume, trying to convince me that I really should let her speak to H.H.'s posse about the whole ho thing, as setting boundaries is her middle name. Then Mr. X dances into the tune of Monster Mash, pulling off his head to reveal that he is actually my Harvard hottie, demanding to be taken to the bathroom. I jolt awake. "Nanny, I gotta pee!" Monster Mash blares down on us. I locate a clock under the cobwebs. 9:30. Okay, so it's what? 20 minutes up the FDR? 10 to get out of this thing, and another 20 to get downtown to Nightingale's? He'll still be there, right? Okay, let's get this show on the road. Let's find a bathroom and get moving. Nanny, slow down! I pick up my dragging Grayer and sling him onto my purple hump as I dart between the downed and wounded who are either mid or post sugar crash. "Coming through, coming through. Have you seen the bathroom?" I inquire of a 5-foot Indian woman in a Barney costume trying to placate a screaming 3-foot Barney who can't seem to bite a donut off a string and has taken the matter directly to heart. She points over her shoulder at a line winding endlessly around the corner. I look around for out-of-the-way potted foliage, preparing a speech about how this is just like the playground. Grayer points behind me. "The bathroom is that way, in my daddy's office." I plop him down, instructing him to lead the way like someone is chasing us. He takes off down the deserted corridor with his hands between his legs. It's darker and quieter than the room we've just escaped, and I speedwalk to keep Grayer in sight. Halfway down the hall, he pushes a door open, and I run to catch up, practically rolling over him when he freezes in the darkened doorway.
"Well, hello there, Grayer," a woman's voice startles us.
Mr. X flips on the lamp as she comes around the desk in black fishnets, leotard, and a bowler hat. I recognize her instantly.
"Hello, Nanny," she says, tucking her loose red hair under the hat.
Grayer and I are speechless. Mr. X steps out from behind the desk, readjusting himself and surreptitiously wiping lipstick from his mouth. Grayer, say hello.
I love your costume, she says brightly before Grayer can even speak.
See, I'm Chicago, because that's our biggest market.
She's not wearing any pants, he says quietly, pointing at her netted legs and looking up at me.
Mr. X swiftly picks up Grayer without looking at any of us, including Grayer, and with a, time to call it a night, sport, let's find your mother, heads back toward the party.
We had to find a bathroom. Grayer has to go. I call after them, but he doesn't look back.
I turn to Ms. Chicago, but she's already past me, clicking down the hall in the opposite direction. Fuck. I sit down on the leather couch and slump my face in my hands.
I don't want to know this. I don't want to know this. I don't want to know this.
I grab a shooter from the deserted tray of chilled vodka shots on the coffee table and down it. Thankfully, within minutes, the exes and I are flying up the FDR, and Grayer has completely passed out with his head in my lap. I suspect there may be a stain on the seat when we get out, but hey, we were all adequately warned. Mr. X leans his head back against the leather upholstery and closes his eyes. I crack the window an inch to let some fresh air blow over me from the East River. I'm a little drunk. Yeah, I'm a little more than a little drunk. In the distant background, I hear the tentative chatter of Mrs. X.
I was talking to Ryan's mother, and she says Collegiate is one of the top schools in the country. I'm going to call tomorrow and set up an interview for Grayer. Oh, and she told me that she and Ben are taking a house in Nantucket this summer. It turns out that Wallington and Susan have summered there for the last 4 years, and Sally says it's a delightful break from the Hamptons. She says it's so pleasant just to get away from the Maidstone every once in a while so the children can experience some diversity. And Caroline Horner has a house up there? Sally said Ben's brother is going to Paris this summer, so you could take his membership at their tennis club. And Nanny could come, too. Wouldn't you like to join us for a few weeks on the ocean this summer, Nanny? It will be so relaxing. My ears perk up at the sound of my name, and I find myself responding with unmitigated enthusiasm. Totally. Relaxing and fun. F-U-N. Bring it on, I say, trying to give a purple thumbs up, as I imagine me, the ocean, my Harvard hottie. Nantucket. Swim, sand, and surf. I mean, what's not to love? Sign me up. Beneath my half-closed eyes, I see her look at me quizzically before turning to the snoring Mr. X.
Well, then, she pulls her mink up close around her and speaks to the city racing by outside the window. That settles it. I'll call the realtor tomorrow. A half hour later, my cab whizzes back down the FDR in the opposite direction toward Houston Street as I check for traces of grease paint in my compact. I lean forward to catch a glance at the cabbie's clock, and the glowing green letters read back 10:24. Go, go, go. My heart starts to race, and the adrenaline sharpens my senses considerably. I feel the bump of each pothole and can smell the last passenger's cigarette. The combination of the surreal tenor of the evening, the numerous drinks I have consumed, the leather pants I'm poured into, and the promise of a potential hookup with Harvard hottie all add up to a lot of pressure. I am, in no uncertain terms, on a mission. Whatever reservations I had, political, moral, or otherwise, have melted past my lace underwear and into my Prada shoes. The cab pulls up at 13th Street on a particularly seedy stretch of 2nd Avenue, and I toss the driver $12 and jog inside. Nightingales is one of those places I vowed never to set foot in again after I graduated from high school. The beers served in plastic cups, drunk men armed with darts make getting safely to the bathroom a challenge, and if you do make it, the door doesn't close. It is the proverbial shithole. It takes all of 2 seconds for me to swing my head around and see that there is no Harvard hottie to be found. Think, think. They were going to start at chaos. Taxi! I leap out on the corner of West Broadway and take my place on line behind a clump of people who have actually come here voluntarily. I'm waved behind the ropes with a clique of scantily clad girls while a frustrated throng of guys try to take on one of the bouncers. Let's see some ID.
I pull open my purse and hand the 6'8 bouncer a juice box, Hot Wheels, and handy wipes before uncovering my wallet.
That'll be $20.
Fine, fine. I throw him 2 hours in a Teletubbies outfit and make my way up a darkened staircase lined with inappropriate black and white photographs of naked women with trumpet lilies. The bass beat from the house music is like aural rape, and as I'm propelled along by the bump-ba-bump, it reminds me of the old cartoons where Tom's music would bounce Jerry right out of his matchbox bed. I start wending my way into the crush of people looking for what? Brown hair, a Harvard t-shirt. The crowd is a mishmash of tourists and NYU students from Utah and gay guys, the balding married ones from the island, and they all went shopping on 8th Street. It's not an attractive crowd. The strobe makes it feel as if they're flashing in front of me like my own private slideshow. Ugly person, ugly person, ugly person. I try to make my way onto the dance floor, for which I pay a price. Not only is the crowd unattractive, it is supremely uncoordinated. But enthusiastic. Uncoordinated and enthusiastic. A lethal combination. I maneuver carefully through the flailing limbs toward the bar at the far end of the room, making an effort to stay in motion. You're only vulnerable to unwelcome advances if you stand still or, heaven forbid, dance, in which case you are guaranteed to have an unfamiliar pelvis pressed firmly against your ass within seconds. Martini, straight up, no olive? I need a little pick-me-up to put the edge back on.
Martinis, pretty hard stuff, don't you think?
Oh, my God. It's Mr. Cox. I thought H.H. was hanging out with his college friends tonight.
Is that good? You like that?
What? I can't hear you, I mouth as I start scanning over his white hat for H.H. in the crowd.
Martinis! Hard stuff.
Right. Sorry, not a word. I don't see him anywhere, which means I'm going to have to remind Hard Martini over here about Dorian's.
Hard.
Sure, big guy, whatever you say.
Listen, we met at Dorian's. I'm looking for your friend.
Right, the nanny.
Yep, that's me.
Is he here?
I shout.
The nanny!
Yeah, I'm looking for your friend. Is he here?
Right, yeah, he was here with some of his college buddies, bunch of art house pussies. They went to some fucking art gallery poetry thing.
The next thing?
I shout into his ear, hoping to permanently deafen him.
Yeah, that's it. Bunch of biddies in black turtlenecks drinking fucking imported coffee.
Thanks!
And I'm off. I get outside into the cold air and look with relief at the bouncer as he undoes the ropes. I take out my wallet and do an inventory. Okay, I can walk it in 10 and save the money, but these shoes are... Hello? I look over to see me in flannel pajamas on Charlene's futon watching educational television with George. Hello? Can we talk for a second here? You got up at 5:30 this morning. Did you even eat a full meal today? When was the last time you had a glass of water and your feet are killing you? So, I ask myself as I puff along Spring Street, so you are tired, you are drunk, and if you don't mind my saying, you're not looking all that great. Go home. Even if you find him, look, you flannel-wearing, couch-warming, low-mane-eating loser, you are sitting at home alone. I know from sitting home, okay? My feet are bleeding. I'm down with that. I cannot fully inhale due to the leather pants, and there is a permanent lace indentation up the crack of my ass, but I deserve this date. This date will happen because I still have grease paint behind my ears. I've earned this. What if I can't find him? Ever again? What if he never finds me? Sure, I want to be home. I want to be on the couch. But I need to hook up first. I have the rest of my life to watch TV. Yeah, you don't really seem all that... Well, of course not. Who would be at this hour? It's not about that. I have to win. He has to see me in my leather pants. He cannot, cannot,
cannot go to bed tonight with the last image he has of me being in a huge purple Teletubby costume. Out of the question. Good night. I harden my resolve and turn on to Mercer, heading up to the bouncer. An art gallery with a bouncer? Don't even get me started.
Sorry, lady. We're closed for a private function tonight.
But I'm dumbfounded.
Sorry, lady.
And that is that.
Taxi.
I bum a cigarette off the driver and exhale as the city goes by in reverse. I honestly think, years from now, taxi rides like this will be the defining memory of my early 20s. I mean, really, if you wanted to see me commit to a place. I flick the ash out the window. It's the whole buffet syndrome. For New York City boys, Manhattan is an all-you-can-eat. Why commit to one place when there might be a cooler one around the corner? Why commit to one model when a better, taller, thinner one could walk in the door at any moment? So, in order to avoid having to make a choice, a decision, these boys make a religion of chaos. Their lives become governed by this bizarre need for serendipity. It's a whole lot of, we'll just see what happens. And in Manhattan, that could be hanging out with Kate Moss at 4 a.m. So if I happen to run into him 3 weekends in a row, then I might end up a girlfriend. The problem then is that their reverence for anarchy forces those of us lucky enough to happen into relationships with them to become the planners, or nothing would happen. We become their mothers, their cruise directors, their nannies. And it runs the gamut from HH not being able to commit to one club for one evening to Mr. X always being late, being early, or not being there at all. I take a drag of my borrowed Parliament, and I think of Lion King costumes, fishnets and leather pants, the hours of planning poured into this night. The cab pulls into 93rd Street, and I fish for the last of my crumpled 20s. As the cab drives away, the city suddenly seems very quiet. I stand there for a moment on the sidewalk. The air is bracingly cold, but it feels good. I sit down on the steps of my building and look over at the dim lights of Queens winking at me across the East River. I wish I had another cigarette. I get upstairs and unbutton my pants, kick off my shoes, reach for water, for pajamas, for George. And on the 9th floor of the electric porcupine that is New York City, Mrs. X is still sitting wide awake in the upholstered chair across from the beige bed, watching as the covers rise and fall with each snore, while somewhere, Ms. Chicago unpeels her fishnets and gets into bed alone. Part 2. Winter. Ooh, I just love Nanny. I absolutely do. She is my mostly companion. Eloise. Chapter 4. Holiday cheer at $10 an hour. I turn the key and lean into the ex's heavy front door, as has become my habit, but it only swings open a foot before getting stuck. Huh, I say. Huh, Grayer echoes behind me. Something's blocking the door, I explain as I reach my arm around and begin to grope blindly to identify the obstructing object. Mom! The door won't open! Grayer, wasting no time, uses his own approach. I hear the slide of Mrs. X's stocking feet. Yes, Grayer, Mommy's coming. I simply couldn't carry all my elfing past the door in one trip. She pulls the door open and is revealed knee-deep in piles of shopping bags on the foyer floor. Gucci, Ferragamo, Chanel, Hermes, and endless silver boxes with purple ribbon, the signature Bergdorf's holiday wrap. She holds what must have been the offending item, a large Tiffany blue package, under her arm, and greets us. Can you believe people actually get engaged this time of year? As if there isn't enough to do, I also had to run all the way to Tiffany's to pick up a sterling serving tray. They should at least have had the decency to wait till January. It's just one more month, really.
I'm so sorry, Grayer, that I couldn't come to your party. I'm sure you had a wonderful time with Nanny.
I put my backpack down in the coat closet and slip off my boots before crouching to help Grayer with his jacket. He gingerly protects the ornament we've just spent the past 3 hours constructing with his classmates and their nannies at his school's family Christmas party. He drops to the floor so I can pull off his wet boots.
Grayer constructed quite the masterpiece, I say. He's really a wizard with styrofoam and glitter.
I look up at her as I place his boots on the mat.
It's a snowman. His name is Al. He has a cold, so he has to take lots of vitamin C.
Grayer describes Styrofoam Al as if announcing him as the next guest on Letterman.
Ah, she nods, shifting the Tiffany's package to her hip. Why don't you go look for a spot for Al to hang out?
I help him up, and he shuffles off toward the living room with his artwork held in front of him like a Fabergé egg. I stand up, brush myself off, and face Mrs. X, ready to give the report. I wish you could have seen him this morning. He was totally in his element. He loved the glitter, and he really took his time with making it. You know Giselle Rutherford?
Jacqueline Rutherford's daughter?
Of course. Oh, her mother is too much. When it was her turn to do snack, she brought in a chef and set up an omelet bar in the music corner. I mean, really. The rule is you are supposed to come with the snack prepared. Tell me.
Well, Ms. Giselle insisted that Grayer do his snowman according to her color scheme. Orange, because she's spending this Christmas in South Beach.
Oh, how tacky. Her eyes are wide.
She pulled Al right out of Grayer's hands, and he landed smack in the middle of her orange glitter. I thought Grayer would lose it, but he just looked up at me and announced that Al's orange specks were simply crumbs from all the vitamin C he had to take for his cold.
I think he just has a knack for color. She begins to organize her bags.
So, how are finals going?
I'm in the home stretch and can't wait to be done. She stands up and arches her back a little, making a fearful cracking sound. I know, I'm just exhausted. It seems like the list just keeps on growing every year. Mr. X has a huge family and so many colleagues, and it's already the sixth. I cannot wait for Lyford Key. Cannot wait. I'm exhausted.
She gathers up her bags.
When are you off until?
January 26th, I say.
Just 2 more weeks to go, and then I have a whole month off from school and you.
You should go to Europe this January. Do it while you're still a student, before you have real life to worry about.
Oh, so maybe my pending Christmas bonus will cover a plane ticket to Europe.
6 hours in a Teletubby costume says I'm worth it.
She continues, you should see Paris when it's snowing. There's nothing as charming.
Except Grayer, of course. We laugh together as I try to sell her on her own child.
The phone rings, interrupting us.
Mrs. X grabs a few more bags in each hand, tightens her arm around the Tiffany's package, and heads back toward her office.
Oh, Nanny, the tree's been set up. Why don't you and Grayer go down to the basement and bring up the ornaments?
Sure, I call after her as I walk to the living room.
The tree is a magnificent Douglas fir that looks as if it were growing right out of the floor. I close my eyes and inhale for a second before addressing Grayer, who's having an animated exchange with Al, the lone tree decoration teetering on the very tip of a low branch.
Hey, looks like your man Al is getting ready to jump.
I reach for the bent paperclip serving as Al's lifeline.
Don't! He doesn't want you to touch him. Only me, he instructs.
We spend the next 15 tedious minutes relocating Al while ensuring that only Grayer's hands do all the work. I stare up at the many feet of bare greens towering above us and wonder if anyone would notice if the rest of the X's ornaments didn't make it on this year. At the rate we're going, it might conceivably take Grayer well into his 20s. I look down at him as he whispers to Al.
Okay, buddy, I say. Let's go to the basement and bring up the rest of your ornaments so they can keep Al company. They'll be there to talk him down if he gets too close to the edge again.
To the basement?
Yep, let's go.
I gotta get my stuff. Gotta get my helmet and belt. You go to the door, Nanny. I'll meet ya. Gotta get the flashlight.
He runs to his room as I ring for the elevator. Grayer glides back out into the vestibule just as the elevator door opens.
Oh, my God, Grove! All this for the basement?
He puts one sock-covered foot down to stop his skateboard in front of the elevator door. His bicycle helmet sits slightly askew, and he has shoved a huge flashlight into his waistband, along with a yo-yo and what looks to be a monogrammed washcloth from his bathroom.
Okay, let's go,
he says with complete authority. I'm thinking we should at least be wearing shoes for this adventure.
Nah, don't need 'em.
He rolls inside and the door closes behind both of us before I can catch it.
It's so cool down there, Nanny. Oh, man, oh, man.
He nods his helmeted head in anticipation. Grayer has taken to peppering his commentary with oh, mans, as of late, thanks to Christensen, a 4-year-old of remarkable charisma who has a good foot in height over the rest of his classmates. In fact, when Al first made impact with the fateful orange glitter, both Giselle's and Grayer's first utterance was a simultaneous, oh, man. The elevator stops at the lobby, and Grayer rolls ahead of me, propelling himself with one foot while keeping both hands on his waistband so that his packed pants don't succumb to gravity. By the time I catch up, he's already gotten Ramon to lead the way to the caged service elevator.
Ah, Mr. Grayer, you must have important business down there, huh?
Grayer is busy adjusting his tools and offers only a distracted, yep. Ramon smiles in his direction and then winks conspiratorially at me.
He's very serious, our Mr. Grayer. You got a girlfriend yet, Mr. Grayer?
The elevator jerks as we reach the basement. He slides the gate open, and we step out into the bright, cold corridor, rich with the aroma of dryer sheets.
Cage 132, down to the right. Be careful now, don't get lost, or I'll have to come find you.
He winks again, and with a suggestive wiggle of his eyebrows, pulls the door closed, leaving me beneath a dangling light bulb.
Grayer?
I yell down the corridor.
Nanny, I'm waiting, come on!
I follow his voice around the maze of floor-to-ceiling cages lining the walls. Some are more packed than others, but each has the requisite luggage, ski equipment, and random pieces of bubble-wrapped furniture. I round the bend and see Grove lying on his stomach atop his skateboard under a sign that says 132, pulling himself along the wired wall by his hands.
Oh, man! It's going to be so fun when Daddy comes home and does the tree. Caitlin gets us started, and Daddy does the high-ups, and we have hot chocolate in the living room.
Sounds pretty cool. Here, I have the key, I say, holding it out toward him. He jumps up and down as I unlock the cage and then proceeds to deftly make his way in around the boxes. I let him lead, as he's clearly made this trek before, and I wouldn't know a storage locker from an easy-bake oven. I sit down on the cold cement and lean back on the cage door facing that of the exes. My parents used to daydream about storage space, sitting with both feet up on the trunk packed to bursting with our summer clothes that served as our coffee table. On occasion, we'd allow ourselves to talk about what we could do with one extra closet, much as a family in Wyoming might fantasize about winning the lottery.
Do you know what you're looking for, Grove?
I call into the piles, as I haven't heard anything in a few minutes. Loud clanging noises break the silence.
Grayer, what's going on in there?
I start to stand up as his flashlight comes rolling out of the darkness and stops at my feet.
Just getting my stuff out, Nanny. Turn the light on me. I'm going to get the blue box.
I click the high beam on and point it into the cage as directed, illuminating two dirtied socks and a little khaki rear end tunneling into the middle of the pile.
Are you sure that's safe, Grayer? I think maybe I should...
What, crawl in behind him?
I got it! Oh, man, there's lots of stuff back here. My skis! These are my skis, Nanny, for when we go to Aspirin.
Aspen?
Aspen. Found it. Going to pass them out. Get ready. You get ready, Nanny. Here they come.
He is far into the boxes. I hear fumbling, and then a glass ball comes flying out of the darkness at me. I drop the flashlight and catch it. It is hand-blown and has a Steuben mark on it, along with a red hook. Before I can look up, another one comes flying out. Grayer, freeze! With the flashlight rolling around on the floor, casting a weird light on Grayer's boxes, I realize I've been letting Mickey Mouse run the show. Back it up, mister. Back it right on up. It's your turn to hold the flashlight.
No,
Grayer. It's the Wicked Witch voice. Fine. He tunnels back out. I hand him the flashlight. Now let's try this again. Only this time, you'll be me and I'll be you. When we get back up to the apartment, Grayer marches ahead to establish a plan of attack while I gingerly set the box of ornaments down in the front hall. Nanny? I hear a small voice call for me. Yes, G? I follow him into the living room where a flamboyant Johnny Cash is on a ladder decorating Grayer's tree.
Pass me that box of doves, he says, not even turning to look at us.
Grayer and I, standing safely by the door, survey the living room floor, which is littered with doves, gold leaves, Victorian angels, and strings of pearls.
Get down! My dad does the high-ups.
Hold on a sec, Grayer, I say as I pass off the birds to the man in black. I'll be right back.
You better get down or my daddy's going to be mad at you,
I hear Grayer challenge as I knock on Mrs. X's office door.
Come in.
Hi, Mrs. X. Sorry to bother you. The room, ordinarily pristine, has been taken over by her elfing and stacks of Christmas cards.
No, no, come in. What is it?
I open my mouth.
Have you met Julio? Isn't he a genius?
I'm so lucky I got him. He is the tree expert. You should see what he did at the Egglestons. It was just breathtaking.
While I've got you, can I ask, is a plaid taffeta skirt just too cliché for a Scottish Christmas party? I can't decide.
Oh, you should see. I bought the cutest twin sets today for Mr. X's nieces. I hope they're the right color. Would you wear winter weight cashmere pastels? She pulls out a TSE shopping bag.
I might exchange them.
I was just wondering, I cut in. Grayer was really looking forward to decorating the tree. He said it was something he did with Caitlin last year, and I was wondering if maybe I could just get him a small tree for his room that he could hang a couple of ornaments on just for fun. I really don't think it would be a good idea to be traipsing needles all over that part of the house. She searches for a solution.
If he wants a tree activity, why don't you take him to Rockefeller Center?
Well, yeah. No, yeah, that's a great idea, I say as I open the door.
Thanks, I'm just so overwhelmed.
When I get back into the living room, Grayer is holding a silver baby spoon on a string and tapping on Julio's ladder.
Hey, how about this? Where does this go? He asks.
Julio looks down in disgust at the spoon.
That doesn't really gel with my vision.
Grayer's eyes start to well up.
Well, if you must, in the back, on the bottom.
Gee, I've got a plan. Grab Al. I'll get your coat.
Grandma, Grayer. Grayer,
this is Grandma. My grandmother crouches down in her black satin pajama pants, her pearls clicking together as she extends her hand.
Pleased to meet you, Grayer. And darling, you must be Al.
Grayer blushes deeply.
Well, are we doing Christmas or what? Everybody in who wants arugula.
Thanks so much, Gran. We were in desperate need of a surface to decorate. The doorbell rings behind us as I reach to take off Grayer's coat.
A surface? Don't be ridiculous.
She reaches over Grayer's head to open the door, and there stands a huge tree with two arms wrapped around it.
Right this way, she says.
Now, Grayer, she whispers, you cover Al's eyes. It's all about the surprise.
We kick off our boots and follow closely behind them into the apartment. I've got to hand it to her. She has the delivery man place it squarely in the middle of the living room. She sees him out and returns to join us.
Grandma, you really didn't have to get a... If you're going to do something, darling, then do it all the way.
Now, Grayer,
Let me hit the special effects and we'll get this soiree started.
Grayer holds his hands carefully over Al's eyes as my grandmother turns on Frank Sinatra.
Can't find Bing, she mouths and hits the lights.
She's lit candles all about the room, setting a beautiful glow around our family pictures, and as Frank croons, "The Lady is a Tramp," it's breathtaking. She leans down to Grayer.
Well, sir, whenever you're ready, I believe Al should meet his tree.
We both make drumroll noises as Grayer takes his hands off Al's eyes and asks him exactly where he would like to hang out first. An hour later, the two of us are lounging on cushions beneath the green boughs, sipping hot chocolate while Grayer relocates Al at whim.
So, how's the drama with your H.H.?
I can't get a read on him. I want him to be different from those boys, but there's really no good reason why he would be. Of course, if I never see him again, it's pretty irrelevant.
Keep riding the elevator, dear. He'll show up.
So how are finals going? She asks.
Only one more and I'm done. It's been insane. The exes have been out at Christmas parties every night. I only study after Grayer goes to sleep, which ultimately is probably better than trying to concentrate over the sounds of Charlene and her hairy boyfriend.
She looks at me. Don't even get me started.
Well, just don't wear yourself out. It's not worth it.
I know. But the bonus is bound to be good this year. She's mentioned Paris.
Ooh la la, très bien.
Nanny, Al wants to know why Daddy isn't doing the high-ups.
Grayer asks quietly from behind the tree. I look over at her, unsure how to answer him.
Grayer,
she smiles at me reassuringly,
has Nan told you about wassailing?
He emerges. What did you say? He comes up close to her and puts his hand on her knee.
Wassailing, darling. When you wassail, you make Christmas.
You, little Grayer, are the very best gift you can give. All you do is knock on someone's door, someone you want to share the joy of Christmas with, and when they open it, you sing your heart out. Wassailing, you've got to try it.
He lies down next to me, and we look up through the branches with our heads together on a pillow.
Grandma, you show me. Sing something, he says.
I turn my head and smile at her. From where we lie, she seems to be glowing as she leans against the chaise surrounded by candles. She begins to sing along with her Frank to "The Way You Look Tonight." Grayer closes his eyes, and I fall just a little bit more in love with her.
A week later, in excited pursuit of Mr. X, Mrs. X and Grayer march eagerly ahead of me along the same corridor I chased Grayer down at the Halloween party. Boughs of greens and twinkling colored lights now hang where fake cobwebs had been. Mrs. X pushes Mr. X's heavy office door open.
Darling, come in. He stands, backlit by the setting sun, which pours in through the floor-to-ceiling windows behind his desk. I am immediately struck by his capability to exude relaxed power in this room with the lights on as well as off. He looks through me in Grayer's general direction.
Hey, sport.
Grayer tries to hand off the bag of Christmas presents we've brought for the charity his father's company supports, but Mr. X has already picked up the blinking phone. I take the presents and lean down to unbuckle Grayer's toggle coat.
Justine said something about cookies in the conference room. Why don't you take Grayer down there? I have to take this call, and then I'll join you,
Mr. X instructs, his hand over the mouthpiece. Mrs. X drops her mink on the couch, and we file back out toward the sound of Christmas carols coming from behind the double doors at the end of the hall. Mrs. X is a sugar plum vision in her moschino green suit with red holly berry trim and mistletoe buttons. To top it off, the heels of her shoes are miniature snow globes with a reindeer in one and Santa in the other. I am just grateful not to be dressed up as Frosty the Snowman and wear my Christmas tree pin with pride. With a grand smile, she pushes the doors open into the conference room, at the far end of which sits a small gaggle of women, whom I assume to be secretaries,
opening a tin of cookies and playing Alvin and the Chipmunks on a tape player. "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking for the Christmas party," Mrs. X says, stopping short at the head of the table. "Would you like a cookie? I made them myself," a jolly-looking, robust woman with Christmas tree-light earrings calls back. "Oh," Mrs. X seems confused. The doors swing open again, narrowly missing Grayer and me. I inhale sharply as Ms. Chicago steps in to join our cluster. She maneuvers around us to get to Mrs. X, her tight flannel suit leaving little more to the imagination than her Halloween costume did. "I heard there were cookies," she says as a sturdy-looking brunette comes flying in behind her, pushing us all forward against the table. "Mrs. X," the brunette says, slightly out of breath. "Justine, Merry Christmas," Mrs. X greets her. "Hi, Merry Christmas. Why don't you come with me to the kitchen and we'll get some coffee?" "Don't be silly, Justine," Miss Chicago smiles. "There's coffee right here." She walks over to the chrome pot and pulls out a styrofoam cup. "Won't you go see what's taking them so long with those numbers?" "Are you sure you don't want to come with me, Mrs. X?" "Justine." Miss Chicago raises an eyebrow, and Justine walks slowly back out the double doors. "Are we early?" Mrs. X inquires. "Early for what?" Miss Chicago asks, pouring two cups of coffee. "For the family Christmas party." "That's next week. I'm surprised your husband didn't tell you. Shame on him," she laughs, handing the coffee to her. Grayer squeezes past Ms. Chicago's exposed knees, swaggering down to the other end of the table to wow the secretaries out of a cookie. Mrs. X stammers. "Well, my husband must have gotten the dates confused."
"Men," Ms. Chicago snorts.
Mrs. X shifts the styrofoam cup to her left hand. "I'm sorry. Have we met?"
Lisa Chenoweth," Ms. Chicago smiles. "I'm managing director of the Chicago branch."
"Oh," Mrs. X says. "Nice to meet you."
"I'm so sorry I couldn't get to your dinner party. I heard it was lovely. Unfortunately, that slave driver husband of yours insisted I hightail it back to Illinois."
She tilts her head to the side and smiles brilliantly, like a canary-filled cat.
"The gift bags were adorable. Everyone just loves the pens."
"Oh, good." Mrs. X raises her hand protectively to her collarbone. "You work with my husband?" And with that, I decide to make helping Grayer pick out the perfect reindeer cookie my personal mission.
"I'm heading up the team working on the Midwest Mutual merger. Isn't it awful? Well, I'm sure you know."
"Truly," Mrs. X says, but her voice rises, betraying her uncertainty.
"Getting them down to 8% was such a coup. You must have had some sleepless nights over that one," she says, shaking her Titian hair in sympathy. "But I told him if we push the sell date up and save them the liquidation costs, they might bend." And they did. They bent right over.
Mrs. X stands very straight, her hand clenched tightly around the styrofoam. "Yes, he's been working very hard." Miss Chicago struts to our end of the table, her lizard skin pumps silent on the plush carpet.
"And you're Grayer. Do you remember me?" she bends down to inquire.
Grayer places her.
"You don't wear pants."
Oh, sweet Jesus. Just then the door opens, and Mr. X strides in, his broad frame towering in the doorway.
"Ed Strauss is on the phone. He wants to go over the contract," he calls down the table to Ms. Chicago.
"Fine," she says, smiling, as she walks slowly back up the room past Mrs. X.
"Merry Christmas, everybody."
As she reaches Mr. X, she adds, "It was so lovely to finally meet your family." His jaw clenched, Mr. X closes the door swiftly behind them.
"Daddy, wait!"
Grayer attempts to follow him out of the room, but the Dixie cup of grape juice slips from his grasp, staining both his shirt and the beige carpet a deep purple. Mercifully, we all turn our attention to the spill, gathering paper napkins and seltzer.
Grayer stands whimpering while multiple manicured hands dab at his front. Nanny, I'd really appreciate it if you kept a closer eye on him. Just get him cleaned up. I'll be waiting in the car. Mrs. X instructs, placing her untouched cup of coffee on the table. Like Snow White putting down the apple. When she looks back up, she has pasted on a beaming smile for the secretaries. See you all next week! The next afternoon, having finished his lunch, Grayer announces our plans as he climbs down from his booster seat.
Wassailing!
What?
I want to wassail. I'm going to make my own Christmas. I knock on the door, you open it, and I sing my heart out.
I'm amazed that he's retained this from our visit over a week ago, but my grandmother does have a way of nestling herself into people's memories.
Okay,
what door would you like me to stand behind? I ask.
My bathroom,
he says over his shoulder as he heads off with purpose toward his wing. I follow him and position myself in the bathroom as directed. A few moments later, I hear his little knock. Yes, I say. Who's there?
Nanny, you are just supposed to open the door. Don't talk, just open it.
Right. Ready when you are. I sit back on the toilet seat and start checking my hair for split ends, sensing that this game may be slow to get off the ground. Again, a small knock. I lean forward and nudge the door open, almost knocking him over.
Nanny, that's mean. You're trying to push me. I don't like that. Start over.
11 knocks later, I finally get it right and am rewarded with a screaming rendition of Happy Birthday that shakes the window pane.
Grover, why don't you try a little dancing while you wassail?
I ask when he finishes. Really wow him. I hope he might quiet down if he has to divert some energy to staying in motion.
Wassailing is not dancing. It is singing your heart out.
He puts his hands on his hips.
Close the door and I'll knock,
he says, as if suggesting this routine for the first time. We play wassailing for about half an hour until I remember that Connie, the housekeeper, is here and sick Grayer on her. I hear him from across the apartment screaming happy birthday over her roaring vacuum, and after 5 rounds go back to collect what is rightfully mine. Want to play cards?
No, I want to wassail. Let's go back to my bathroom.
Only if you dance, too.
Oh man, there is no dancing when I wassail.
Come on, mister, we're calling Grandma. One short phone call later, and Grayer is not only dancing and singing the actual Here We Come A-Wassailing Among the Leaves So Green, which is infinitely less painful, but I have been inspired with a delicious plan. As I give Grayer's wassailing outfit, green and red striped turtleneck, felt reindeer antlers, candy cane suspenders, a final once-over for ultra-wassailiness, Mrs. X comes bustling in, Ramon in tow, laden with boxes. Her cheeks are rosy, her eyes are glistening.
Oh, it is a zoo out there, a zoo! I nearly got into a fight with a woman at Hammacher Schlemmer. Put them down over here, Ramon, over the last screw pull. But I just let her have it. I thought there is no point descending to her level.
I think she was from out of town.
Oh, I found the most darling wallets at Gucci.
Does Cleveland understand Gucci? I wonder. Thank you, Ramon. Oh, I hope they like them.
Grayer, what have you been up to?
Nothing, he says, while practicing his soft shoe by the umbrella stand.
Before lunch, we made unsweetened cookies and decorated them, and then we've been practicing carols, and I read him The Night Before Christmas in French, I say, trying to jog his memory.
Oh, wonderful. I wish someone would read to me. She takes off her mink and nearly hands it to Ramon.
Oh, that's all, Ramon, thank you.
She claps her hands together. So, what are you up to now? I was going to let Grayer practice his caroling.
Wassailing!
On some of the elderly in the building who might appreciate a little holiday cheer. Mrs. X is beaming.
Oh, excellent! What a good boy you are! And that'll keep him OCCUPIED.
I have so much to do. Have fun! I let Grayer press for the elevator.
Which floor, Nanny?
Let's start with your friend on 11. We have to buzz 3 times before we hear "coming" from inside the apartment. As soon as the door opens, it's apparent the hour and a half of practicing was well worth it. H.H. leans against the doorframe in faded Christmas tree boxers and a well-worn Andover t-shirt, rubbing sleep out of his eyes.
Here we come a-wassailing among the leaves so green.
Grayer is red-faced, swaying back and forth, with his jazz hands splayed and antlers waving. For a split second, it crosses my mind that he might literally sing his heart out.
Love and joy come to you.
His voice ricochets around the vestibule, bouncing off every surface so that it sounds as if he's a chorus of emphatic wassailers, a wassailing riot. When it appears he has reached his conclusion, H.H. bends down and opens his mouth.
And God bless you!
This move mistakenly places him at ground zero to be blasted with the spit and sweat off Grayer's effort, which is then followed by an even louder finale. Well, good morning to you too, Grayer. Grayer collapses onto the vestibule floor, panting to catch his breath. I smile beguilingly. Make no bones about it. I am a girl with a mission. I am here to get a date, a real date with a plan and a location and everything. We're caroling, I begin.
Wassailing,
a small, exasperated voice pipes in from the floor. Wassailing around the building.
Can I have a cookie now?
Grayer sits up, ready to be rewarded for his efforts. H.H. turns into his apartment. Sure. Come on in. Don't mind my pajamas.
Oh, if you insist.
We follow his boxer-clad body into what is essentially the ex's apartment, only 2 floors higher, and one would never guess that we were even in the same building. The walls in the front hall are painted a deep brick red and are decorated with National Geographic-type black-and-white photographs between Killam tapestries. There are sneakers lining the floor and dog hair on the carpet. We make our